The theme this morning is set your intentions so that you can get results. And this is a theme that I really like. It's something that I've talked about in various other contexts before. I've written a little bit about it. And when I got ready to do this sermon this morning, I guess they're sermons, aren't they, or talks or addresses or lectures, I thought it was going to be easy. Well, it wasn't real hard, but it was a little bit challenging because I began to run into some ideas that came together in a way that's very useful. I looked at what Wayne Dyer had to say in this book that he came out with, what was it, 6 years ago. I got mine in 2004, just after it was published, and he talks about the power of intention. And I did a lot of reading in that. It's some pretty good stuff, and I don't necessarily agree with him. But I don't necessarily agree with anybody, not even myself from time to time. But when I say I don't agree with Wayne Dyer, he talks about basic principles and they're wonderful. It's just he uses terminology in a way that I wouldn't use it, just like Ernest Holmes for some of you. And so I looked at what Ernest Holmes had to say about intention. Wayne Dyer defines it wrongly, but he defines it. Well, I don't really mean that. And Ernest Holmes doesn't define it, he just uses it. And we're going to look at some of his usages of the term intention or to intend. And then I did the unthinkable. I went to the dictionary to find out what it says there. And this is what my dictionary says. It said, by the way, my dictionary is the American College Dictionary. It is my old one that I got when I started college, wore out, and I finally went and got on some used book venue. I was able to buy one like my old one, and it's 50 years old. And the reason for it is not because it's such a good dictionary, it's just that the print is big enough that I can read it, you know? You get older and the small print gets less comfortable to read. But at any rate, this is what my dictionary says, and I'm sure not going to cut any time off of this by rambling like that. To intend, the verb to intend is to have in mind something that is to be done or brought about, to design for a particular purpose. I like that. I mean, it says what intention is. It's not to do anything. Wayne Dyer wrote a whole book on the power of intention, but intention is kind of like potential. Have you ever looked at somebody and said, ah, you really have potential? What they're usually telling you is you haven't done anything. Not always, but that's true, isn't it? So you have an intention in the way that it's written in the dictionary is not necessarily a force to accomplish something. And yet Wayne Dyer looks at it in that way. And Ernest Holmes doesn't define it, but he uses the term. And so that's where we're going to start. I want to start with a little quotation that I discovered this morning hanging on my mirror, my bathroom mirror. My wife is out of town, and I don't know where this came from. Maybe she left it for me. But the quotation is this, and it really relates to what we're talking about. He says, she said, or it said, the best way to predict your future is to create it. And we create our future by establishing our intention. And there is power in intention. I want to begin by looking at Dr. Ernest Holmes and what he says in that book that I was just holding there on intention. I looked up several references, selected certain statements of his that deal with the idea of intention. And that's what I'm going to be working from here. The first one is a statement that says it. He talks about the law. He talks about the principle of cause and effect, really, although it doesn't come out in this particularly. But he says, the law follows the word. You know, there is a creative principle within which we live, move, and have our being. And the word that we speak, the law is going to follow that, and the word is going to follow the desire. And the word gives form to the universal substance that permeates all of time and space and beyond and produces the manifestation. Well, we know this. We may not experience it a lot, and we may not know it at real gut level, but we do know it from our studies that there is a law of cause and effect. For every effect, there must have been a cause behind it, and for every cause, there's going to be an effect. And the thing that connects them is this medium, the creative medium, which is this principle, and we call it the law. Then he goes on, he said, that you wonder, what does this have to do with intention? Well, you'll see, it does tie together. Says, then he goes on and he says something that is really interesting, and I love this. He said, there is no effort in the process whatsoever. Wow. But we so often think that if we're going to accomplish something, we got to work our tails off. You know, really get after it, push, coerce, force. Convince. But he's saying when you're working with this principle, there is really no effort involved in it. What we concentrate is our attention. And the attention is that we take notice of. It's kind of a hard thing to define. Attention. What is attention? Well, attention is that you pay attention to, you know. But it's what you notice. It's what you see. It says that is what we concentrate, and that concentration is through your intention. So you give your intention to what it is you want to see occur in your life, or you give your attention to your intention, and after a while your tongue gets all tied up in these words and you wonder what you're really talking about. But there's some really important ideas. Really, believe me, there's some important ideas here. And one of them is that we concentrate our attention on what it is that we want to see take form. It's not that funny. Want to see take form, which is our intention. And then he brings in another term. Now, this is where he mentions intention, finally. He says, this is all done through intention and the willingness. Another key word. The willingness to hold your thought centered until the form appears. So you see, there's some important things here. We're giving a whole process. You focus your attention on whatever is your intention, and at the same time, you've got to be willing to hold yourself steady on whatever that focus of attention is, on what your intention is. I know a lot of words don't sound the same and all, but you get the idea. And you say, well, so what? This is not new. I know it isn't. But sometimes I think we need to be reminded. You remember Frederick Bales, the great metaphysician from, now I can see that some of you don't even know who I'm talking to, but Frederick Bales was a great religious scientist, and he was a guy way back. He wrote a book called The Basic Principles of the Science of Mind, back in the 50s, and that same book is still being distributed on newsstands, and we even have it in our bookstore. So this is a plug for the book, if any of you want to look at it after the service. Anyway, Basic Principles of Science of Mind, and he had contracted or had diabetes. And this was before insulin, and he was told that he was going to die because there was nothing they could do about it. And he began reading some of these kinds of writings, and he was so impressed that he underwent a healing. Now, some people look at it and say, well, that was just a coincidence or whatever, but there are just too many coincidences like that. He was a great metaphysician, became a religious science minister, a colleague of Dr. Ernest Holmes, and he made a comment that's been made by everyone who has ever thought in this direction, except the first time I ever encountered it was in reading that book that I mentioned a moment ago. And it goes like this. The power of the universe, the manifesting power of the universe, flows directly to the focus of your attention. Think of the implication of that. And then we begin to learn after a while that we live, move, and we have our being within this field of unlimited power, of unlimited energy, of unlimited possibility and opportunity. It's all around us. There is no limit to us. And how do we use that in our life? By focusing our attention. Because the manifesting power of the universe flows to the focus of our attention. And our intention determines what it is that we are going to experience in our life. Well, he goes on in another place, and this is a little bit more of some of the same sort of thing, but I like the way he says it. I like this sentence especially. He says, spirit within, and that is within each one of us, cannot conceive failure. Isn't that interesting? Well, I have experienced a lot of failures despite the spirit within me. No. The spirit has not failed. The spirit has just responded through this principle, this law, this creative intention to give you exactly what you have accepted in your experience. And that's one of the other keys. He says spirit cannot conceive failure. What we put into a prayer will come out of it. There is intention in a prayer, but there must be a definite acceptance. There's another key, folks. Focus of attention on your intention, if you will. The willingness to hold yourself steady in that focus. And then the ability to accept it or letting go of whatever it is that may be inhibiting your acceptance of it. I love that. Another quotation that ties this together, and it's this one. We are surrounded by a limitless medium. I've already talked about that. In which the potential of all of our, oh, I love this. The potential of all of our ideas, all of our desires exist in an unformed state. Now, think about this. When I first encountered this idea, I thought it was just too fantastic to be true. It was stupid. I was trained as a scientist engineer type, did research and development work in that arena, and to tell me that everything exists right now, I want to say, where? And I was told that's the wrong question because you can't ask where. Because reality, the level of reality we're talking about is totally devoid of time and space. So there ain't no where and there ain't no when. All there is. There just is. Eric Butterworth, great Unity minister who's gone now, back in New York City, had the whatever he called his outfit. He makes a comment in some lectures that I listened to of his. He says, there is no time. And there is no space at the level of reality. So when you talk about something occurring in the here and now, you don't know what you're talking about. If you're really talking about transcending that. Because to say here means a place. To say now means a time. So there just is. So you can say that we are in, at the level of reality, we are in a state of ising. Isn't that neat? I like that. So let's all is together. Okay? And it's easy. We got, you know, we don't have to take any time to do it. We just do it, okay? Or find a place to do it. So that sounds a little intimidating to some people, but at any rate, all desires exist, all ideas. I first encountered this when I was reading Thomas Troward, where he talked about everything existing at this level of reality as a divine prototype. It may not be in form, but the idea is there, and we're the ones that give it form by directing our attention according to our intention. I love that idea. I just wish that I could really make it work like that in my life. But I have a lot of doubts. I have a lot that holds me back because I haven't brought myself fully to that point, and sometimes not even a little bit to that point, where I can really fully accept. And yet, that is one of the keys. We are all made in the image and likeness of that which made us. We've been told this over and over by every Enlightenment tradition of the world. And we struggle with that. We fight against it. And we will agree that it's so, but for somebody else. But not me. I remember the story I heard of Satya Sai Baba. Are you familiar with Sai Baba? The great Indian saint, that he's alive today still, lives in India. And he's accredited with having done some miraculous things. I mean, really miracles, you know, raising the dead and manifesting things out of thin air. And I've seen movies of him manifesting things out of thin air, but I've seen magicians do the same thing. And I know people that know him, however, who acknowledge his incredible abilities. And one day he was with some of his students doing some of his, I call them party games and parlor tricks. But I mean, that's okay. He did that because it impresses people, but it, basically what he's done while he's impressing a lot of people with his signs and demonstrations, he's built universities and hospitals and summer camps and all kinds of things throughout India, and I guess his influence is growing and growing and growing among millions of people. He's worth looking up. Sai Baba, S-A-I-B-A-B-A. And one of his disciples asked him when he was doing his thing one time, he says, "Are you God?" And he looked at him and he smiled and he said, "Yes, I'm God. And so are you. The difference between you and me is that I know it." Isn't that neat? And that's true. The Jesuses, the Buddhas, the Lao Tzus, all of the great masters of the Enlightenment traditions, and people among us today, some of whom we may work with and be around, they know who they are. And the difference between them and you may not be superficial, it may not be something that you just see there, but they know who they are, and they have incredible lives, or certainly they are more nearly functioning that way than the average person is. And that's, I think we need to remember that. And it's kind of like the Buddha, where he similarly was talking with some of his students, and he was at the side of the road, and he was amazing them with his wisdom. And they asked him, "Sir, are you an enlightened one? Are you a saint? Are you an angel?" He says, no, I'm none of those things. I'm awake." That need? And that's one of the keys, is to wake up. Pay attention, stupid. Have you ever heard that before? Wake up and begin to see clearly. But you're not going to see clearly until you're willing to acknowledge that there is something within you that will allow you to experience life in a way that you have never experienced it before. Being awake, Ernest Holmes has this to say, and this is the last quotation from Ernest. "To awaken oneself is to be healed, made prosperous, to be happy and satisfied, to be made in every whit and whole, to be complete as we were intended to." There's that word intention again in the way he uses it. And he uses it in a way that implies that there is kind of like a cosmic or universal intention. And we live within that field of intention. And somehow or another we can discover our place within it and the part that we have to play. And I believe that we all are unique individualizations of this infinite thing that we call God. And that's what it means to have been made in its image and likeness. And we can choose the role that we want to play or discover the role, whichever that is. Let's look at what this guy, Wayne Dyer, has to say. I've met him. I know him. He kissed me on the top of my head one time. He's much taller than I. Well, I was introducing him at a symposium, and I introduced him, and he walked out and walked over to me, and he put his hands, one on each shoulder, and he looked at me and he says, "I really like your hairstyle." And he reached over and kissed me on the top of my head. Anyway, so we do have something in common. Dyer says this about intention. It's kind of his definitions. Intention is not something that you do, but rather a force that exists in the universe as an invisible field of energy. And this is not too different from what I've been implying and some of the things that I've been saying here. We have the means to attract this energy to us and experience life in an exciting new way. The only way you deactivate this force, this energy, is by believing that you are separate from it. Wow. We've created such a context of separation that distances us from the good of life. Now, he puts that in a particular way, and I would probably phrase things a little bit differently. But it means the same thing. And whether we want to define intention the way he does it, it doesn't matter. We're talking about a principle. And I look at the whole system within which we live and move and have our being, it kind of this way, when we talk about the process of life and the unfoldment in life, it's really an evolutionary process that's set in motion by the infinite, acting through nature according to its own design and inclination to bring about results that are consistent with that original pattern. Does that make sense to you? There is a natural inclination of life to express itself. This is God through life in the earthly experience, according to its own design. And I am part of that, and you are part of that. Every one of us is part of that. And because of that, we can come into an alignment with it and choose the part. And I've never been able to quite get this straight, the part that we are here to play or choose a part we wish to play. I think it maybe works both ways. We do have a choice, and that is the important thing. Now, all that talk about intention, how do you effectively develop an intention that is going to lead to some useful, positive result in your life? That's what this little slip is that you have in your bulletin today. It's entitled Setting Intentions. And there's a whole paragraph there. We've talked about that stuff. I'm not going to talk about it again. But it's a very simple three-step process. So take a look at it. The first step is intention itself. Set the intention. The second step is to validate that intention. In other words, once you set the intention, then you complete this. These are the reasons I intend the above. And then finally, you come back and you look at it and you say, I know this is step three. I know this to be true because this is like looking for the, what would I say? Your resonance with the reality of who you are. Now, this is a fictitious example that I have on example number one. All right? I made this up. Of course, you can make something up and make it fit anything. What? You don't have that. Oh, sorry. Anybody else not have it? Well, can you look on with somebody back there? Good heavens. Okay. Anybody else need one? I have another one in my pocket here. Yeah, there is going to be a test. Yeah. You know, this is one of these places, admission free, but you pay to get out. That comes next, by the way. We call that the offering, but at any rate. Okay, let's look at this first one, intention. I wrote this intention, it's totally fictitious, but it gives you an idea, and it's very mundane, very materialistic. I intend to receive inspiration, insight, and all the material resources I need to complete Project XYZ by April 21st, 2010. That's pretty specific, isn't it? I mean, you may not know what XYZ is. I don't know what XYZ project is either. But it's a pretty specific intention. But intending doesn't get it done. But it's not going to get done until such time as I can convince myself that this is a valid intention. And that's what the next step is about here. The next step is, these are the reasons I intend the above. And so I list them this way. Completion of project XYZ, number one, supports me in pursuing my life's purpose. Two, encourages development of my talents and skills. Three, is an inspiration to others to challenge and develop their skills and talents. Okay, so this is what I came to as a result of establishing an intention. And then finally, how do I know that to be true to the reality of my own existence, my own being? Well, I've listed three things here. I feel excited, enthusiastic, and creative whenever I'm involved in activities, the kinds of activities I encounter in Project XYZ. Number two, people are helped through their involvement in this project. And number three, completion of the project demonstrates to me the ever-present influence of spirit in the activities of my life. So you see how it hangs together? One, what is it specifically that you are intending? Number two, how do you validate that? What are the reasons for that intention? Or is it just a wild hair, a wild idea that you have? And then, does that really resonate? Is it true to the reality of who I am? Now, if you turn over that and look at the example number two, this is a real example, and this is one that I made up and I carry around in my little notebook with me, and I see it at least a couple of times a day because I'm always, you know, my little planner. And actually, the first thing I see is a picture of my wife on that first enclosure. Then I turn the page and I look at my intention. But this is real, and I gave this a lot of thought. I didn't come up with this overnight, and I've been working with this intention since 2006. That's 4 years. And I have other intentions that I've written out just like this. My intention? I intend to receive into my life on an ongoing basis. This one never ends, by the way. All the inspiration, guidance, and human and material resources necessary to meaningfully serve people in their personal and spiritual unfoldment, thus fulfilling my divine destiny. That, to me, is very clear on what I am doing through and as a result of establishing this intention. But why do I have that intention? How do I validate it? What are the reasons for this intention? And I've listed four here. Number one, it is my purpose to help people to discover, develop, and express their creativity and to have fun in the process. That, by the way, is my life's purpose. I came up with that 15 years ago and it hasn't changed since. To help people discover, develop, and express their creativity and have fun. Fun was non-existent in my life in a lot of ways. Fun was always an afterthought. It was looking back at the fun that I had or really should have had. Have you ever done a lot of fun things and never had any fun? Well, start having fun. And so I incorporated this into any statements of my intentions or purpose. Number two reason. I want the remaining years of this incarnation to be the most meaningful of my life. And I'm finding that they are. I am as excited today as I've ever been before. As a matter of fact, it seems like I'm just getting wound up. I just don't know what to do with the old body that I'm trying to carry along with it, but it's okay. We accommodate. Number three, I am most happy and satisfied when I'm able to nurture and encourage people in the opening and expression of their consciousness. This really gives me a real thrill. Number four, doing these things jazzes me. Okay, I put it here a little bit more sophisticated. Enlivening is enlivening and fun for me, but I really get jazzed when I do this sort of thing. These are my reasons for this intention, and to me they're valid reasons. Now, how do I know that it's really true for me? Or have I just fooled myself in this? Do I resonate with that? And that's where this last segment comes in. I know this to be true because it is natural to be fully expressed or to fully express divine gifts and talents and skills. And number two, the universal intention is always God's will, if you will, for us. The universal intention, the natural inclination of the universe is always towards us living lives of joy, love, fulfillment, and abundance. Not limitation. That feels good, and that fits in with all of my reasons as well as the intention. And number three, I am open and ready for the full expression and experience of life. Do you see how this works? Do you also see, those of you that have had the teachings, have taken some of the courses, that I'm really talking basically about a kind of spiritual mind treatment? I implied, but I don't have the first step of tuning in, you know, recognition and identification or unification. But it's there, in it. And when you finish by going through this and reading something like this daily or whenever, use it like you would a prayer, an affirmative prayer, or what we call spiritual mind treatment. Give thanks and allow it to be so. Accept it as so, and so it is. And by the way, this is what we would categorize this as one of the two forms of affirmative prayer that we teach. One is called realization, when you're so clear you don't need any reasons, you just know it intuitively, or the argumentative process, where you've made the argument, and that's what I've done here. I validated what it is that I'm looking for. I validated the direction that I am giving my attention, to which I am giving my attention according to my intention. Do it. Out of this group here, there are about 60 people here this morning, I think. Is that about right? There might be 3 or 4 of you that will actually do this. And there will be a whole bunch of you that will intend to. Let's have a very short prayer. And know that there is a power and presence in the universe within which we live, move, and have our being, that we are immersed in this field of unlimited possibilities, that we're made in its image and likeness. We are in the image and likeness of the totality of it all. We call this God. We are possessed of the attributes of the infinite. And we don't fully know what that means, but we can experience it. We can experience any aspect of it that is useful for us in this whole process that we call life, life in the human form. So we know that there is one life. That life is God. That life is my life and the life of everyone here today. It is the life of everyone everywhere. And it is in the realization of that truth that I know intrinsic within all of nature and every denizen of nature is harmony and balance, joy and love, intelligence and creativity. And it is in the acceptance of that truth, the acknowledgement of that truth, the knowing of that truth, just the speaking of that truth, that we open ourselves to healing of any kind of imbalance and discord that may exist. I accept this as so, I know that it is so, I rejoice that it is so, and together we can declare, and so it is.